Hello and welcome to Camp Kaiju Monster Movie Reviews. We're your hosts, Vincent Hannum,
Matt Levine,
and we're talking about all our favorite monster movies, the good, the bad, and the downright campy, and asking if they stand the test of time. Kaiju, creature features, space invaders, the supernatural, and everything in between, all strange beasts welcome here. Camp Kaiju is sponsored by BanditsEmporium.com, where you can shop exclusive monster-inspired t-shirts with part of the proceeds supporting this show. BanditsEmporium.com. Hit the link in our bio. As they say, we sell shirts. Hey, as Camp Kaiju says, stay campy, everybody. We are still continuing with our guest series. Armando, introduce yourself. Who are you and what are we reviewing today?
Hi, my name is Armando, and today we are reviewing the Mighty Morphin Power Rangers, the movie that many of us might know from our childhood. A little bit about myself, longtime friend of your very own Vincent Hannum, and a longtime kind of tangential kaiju fan by way of things like Power Rangers and anime. Specifically giant mecha anime, which I think owe a lot of that tradition to the kaiju tradition. Only recently, I personally got to watch my first like Godzilla movie, maybe in the last like 5 years, but realized that I was already very well versed in all of the kind of language of those films because of all the training I'd had as a child through media. So that's who I am. That's where I'm coming from. And I'm very excited to talk about the Power Rangers.
Yeah, we're glad to have you, Armando. Thank you, everybody, for hanging out, for following us, reviewing the show, checking out our website, campkaijumoviereviews.com. We can't do it without you, bringing guests like Armando here. Matt, what do you think, Matt?
I'm excited to talk about this movie, and I'm coming to it totally fresh. I had never seen this or really like any episodes of the TV show. I think maybe when I was a kid, I saw like bits and pieces here and there, but I wasn't like a huge fan. So, and I like, you know, it was part of our like pop culture consciousness, but I didn't really sort of get the appeal when I was young or, you know, ever since then. So I had honestly kind of low expectations for this movie. And that seems like kind of a good way to go into it because my expectations were exceeded a little bit, which was a pleasant surprise.
That's awesome. And I have been wanting to bring this movie to the show for a long time because I loved it as a kid. I wore out the VHS, maybe more so than even the show. I have my Power Rangers original Red Ranger action figure with kick power. If you press a little button, it still kicks after 30 years. But I hadn't seen it in since the 90s probably. And I was like, wow, I would love to explore the power of nostalgia and see what influence it plays on rewatching this movie. And does this movie actually stand the test of time? And that's why, Matt, I'm kind of sad you didn't watch this growing up, but now I'm glad that you didn't.
Yeah, it's weird because, you know, I liked horror and fantasy and sci-fi when I was young. So you would think like this would be kind of like in my sweet spot when I was a kid. But for whatever reason, like I loved Johnny Quest. I loved James Bond. I loved that sort of thing when I was young. But never got into Power Rangers. But I'll be excited to hear what you and Armando say about like the nostalgia value, because I think that's such a huge thing right now for people our age, like, you know, kind of reboots of things from like the 80s or 90s or whatever. It's a huge thing right now. And I feel like this kind of is lumped into that category a little bit, you know?
Definitely. And with that, we can jump into the synopsis if you guys want to.
Let's go for it.
I'd love to.
Okay, so the film opens with a group of teenage friends preparing to jump from an airplane. They are prepped for a skydiving competition. As each one jumps out of the plane, they have fun performing aerial stunts. Eventually, they land in their hometown of Angel Grove to a cheering crowd. One of their biggest fans is Fred, a 12-year-old boy who is attending the competition with his dad. After some laughs, the teenage friends hit the streets in their rollerblades.
Meanwhile, construction workers accidentally unearth an ancient purple time capsule shaped like an egg. The evil sorceress Rita Repulsa, Lord Zedd, and their minions Goldar and Mordant catch wind of this, It is what they have been looking for. The egg contains an evil villain named Ivan Ooze, who was locked away 6,000 years ago after being defeated by Zordon.
Zordon, the preeminent force for good in the teenagers' lives, calls them to his lair. He warns them that Ooze has been discovered and that they will need to access their Power Ranger abilities to defeat him. But it is not long until Rita Repulsa succeeds in releasing Ivan Ooze from his prison, composed of shape-shifting purple goo. He has a flair for the theatrical, but proves a worthy adversary. And he even imprisons Rita and Lord Zedd in a snow globe of Angel Grove, proceeding with his plans to conquer the world and then the universe.
While the Power Rangers defeat a gang of Ooze's henchmen that he has sent to them, Ooze makes his way to Zordon's lair. There, Zordon is attacked. He is powerless. Zordon, for those not familiar, is a floating head within a large cylindrical container. That's the best way I can put that. But when Ivan Ooze destroys Zordon's lair, it is revealed that Zordon is actually a more or less a human man, sort of like a Wizard of Oz, man behind the curtain type situation going on. So anyways, when Zordon is defeated, the Rangers then lose their powers. They visit Zordon, who explains that their powers can only be regained on a distant primitive planet known as Phaedos. It is the only way Zordon can be saved and Ivan Ooze defeated once and for all.
During all of this, Ivan Ooze begins his domination in Angel Grove. He peddles a gooey brand of ooze to the kids of the city. As the kids bring this seemingly harmless gunk home, the parents are adversely affected. The ooze is made to hypnotize adults, bringing them under Ivan's control. He commands them to begin digging up the scattered pieces of his two giant robot monsters. Once this has been achieved, Ooze commands all the parents to jump to their deaths off of a cliff into a construction site.
Meanwhile, on Phaedos, the now powerless Rangers do their best to overcome a number of obstacles, trials, if you will, including humanoid crows known as Tengu warriors, living dinosaur bones, fierce warriors made of stone. But they are aided on this quest by Dulcea, a warrior princess who protects the great power the Rangers need. This power turns the Rangers into the Ninjetti. With their powers restored, the Rangers return to Earth for a final showdown.
This culminates with each Ranger summoning their respective Mecha Zords, giant robot dinosaurs that they each inhabit and drive like ships. And these Zords individually then come together and combine into the giant Megazord. To match them, Ivan Ooze injects himself into his own fighting robot. And after a rumble in the city, the Rangers are able to fly the now Mecha Ooze into space, where they kick him into an oncoming asteroid. He is destroyed, Zordon restored, the parents saved, and the five teenage friends celebrate in Angel Grove with pizza and fireworks.
That's the movie.
And I also think that every, like, the happy ending of every movie should include pizza and fireworks. That's what I would say.
Who was in this movie, Armando?
Oh, man. I mean, for those that are fans of the original Power Rangers, we have Karen Ashley as Aisha Campbell, the Yellow Ranger, as well as Johnny Young Bosch as Adam Park, the Black Ranger. Both Aisha and Adam were new additions to the cast. But many, while you might not recognize Johnny Young Bosch, if you're a fan of anime, you recognize his voice. He's a pretty prolific anime voice actor from Bash the Stampede and Trigun, Lelouch von Petrania and Code Geass, Ichigo and Bleach, Toji in the Evangelion Rebuilds, and Yun Arikawa in the Netflix Godzilla Singular Point. But with continuing on, we have Steve Cardenas as Rocky DeSantos, the Red Ranger, Jason David Frank as Tommy Oliver, the White Ranger, probably the most famous of all the Power Rangers. Tommy, or Jason David Frank as Tommy, is still a recurring character in many of the Power Rangers series to this day. In fact, there's been teasing right before the pandemic that he might come back as Lord Draken an alternate timeline, evil Green Ranger. But that's a deep
Ooh.
Cut. That's a deep Whoa. Cut. Yeah, Amy Jo Johnson as Kimberly Hart, the Pink Ranger. Probably many of, I don't know, Vince, maybe your first crush, your first celebrity crush, because God, I know that was for me.
Man, those pink shorts, I don't know. But man, she yeah. 90s fashion is back.
David Yost as Billy Cranston, the Blue Ranger. And I have to say all praise goes to Paul Freeman as Ivan Ooze, our villain. And he brings all of his acting chops. He's a renowned theater actor, member of the Royal Shakespeare Company, also appeared in the likes of Raiders of the Lost Ark, Falcon Crest, and the classic Hot Fuzz. And directing by Brian Spicer, who is a longtime TV director.
I just want to second your acclaim for Paul Freeman. I read that like he had to withstand about 7 hours in the makeup chair in order to get into the Ivan Ooze makeup and costume and all that. And I like to give the performance that he does in this movie, like having to, you know, act within like what must have been like seemingly 50 pounds of makeup or something. Really impressive. He's one of the highlights of this movie and gives like a really fun, just like scenery chewing role, you know, like very over the top, which is totally appropriate for this movie.
Amazing. Absolutely amazing. I would just wanted to add, elaborate more on the contractual disputes and why we had sort of a casting change with the Yellow Ranger, Black Ranger, and the Red Ranger. They all dropped out of, they were in the original, the first season of the TV show. They quit the show prior to the film because, well, like you said, contractual disputes, but the show, I did not know this, was a non-union show for the longest time. So despite the global dominance of this TV series and all the merchandise, my action figure, case in point, this of the Red Ranger, this Red Ranger was still getting paid $600 a week. They just couldn't, like, I think the Red Ranger was sleeping out of his car at one point. They were not in the movie subsequently, but those who did replace them, obviously talented in their own right. So, you know, a surprisingly deep cast. I think that kind of is a good segue into the production backstory. Before we get to that, however, I want to tell you all about BanditsEmporium.com. They are the official t-shirt partner of Camp Kaiju. You can find all sorts of monster-inspired t-shirts there at BanditsEmporium.com. You can hit the link in our Instagram bio. You can find that link pretty much anywhere. And whenever you buy a shirt from them, part of the proceeds goes to supporting Camp Kaiju, which is super great. It helps us bring guests like Armando and Frank last week to the show. With that said, I also just want to plug a couple of other ways that you could support Camp Kaiju. All right, I'll just say it. We also have a Patreon. We're not like pushing it super hard right now, but if you want to check us out there and get some exclusive kind of behind the scenes stuff, by all means, like I said, it really is appreciated in supporting bringing guests like Armando and Frank and others to the show. Just some expenses like that. Armando, why you gotta be so expensive?
Well worth it, I would say.
Oh, thank yeah. you. Thank you.
Because we would like to pay our actors more than $600 a week, unlike Haim Saban, who was the producer of the original Power Rangers television series, Saban Entertainment. He took the premise from a Japanese live action show called Super Sentai. He had a brilliant business idea, actually. He would take the essentially stock footage at that point of the fighting and the combat and the monsters. And he would splice that with original footage of the American actors. So yeah, that's why, I don't know, it's part of the goofy B-movie charm of it all. But like I said, the series ran from 1993 to 1996. This was Mighty Morphin Power Rangers. Other incarnations would follow. But Mighty Morphin Power Rangers, the movie, came out in 1995. It was released between the second and third seasons of the show, although it is non-canon. Apparently, it's incompatible with season 3, which provides a different explanation for the Rangers obtaining their ninjetti powers and the Ninja Zords.
Yeah, this is just no Kevin Feige at the wheel here. Yeah. You know, I there's a lot of, I mean, this is a universe and multiple characters and timelines to keep. You know, I think this is the power of like a Kevin Feige who's like very concerned about like consistency amongst the brand, but there's a different focus here.
That's interesting about the level of consistency between different projects. The Mighty Morphin Power Rangers movie was the first to break away from that Super Sentai footage. So there was no quote unquote stock footage in the movie. They went with original, very questionable CGI. I don't know which would have been a better choice if they had just stuck with the Super Sentai footage. But otherwise, you know, the production, it did have some issues. Amy Jo Johnston, she did have her own problems with the nature of, I'm not sure if the movie was non-union.
Well, it was. I read that even though it was a movie, they were still getting paid at the same rate as if they were filming episodes.
I bring that up because Amy Jo Johnson was almost set on fire during a mishap on set. I think it's when she's in her pterodactyl zord and there's like electrical sparks and stuff. It was an unsafe set reflecting that of the television series.
That's so crazy. I was watching this behind the scenes. I think it's an unofficial behind the scenes. It looks like it was recorded by someone on the production crew, and it's very home video. And it's a guy, one of the production crew, is giving a tour of like all these half-built Zords and the interiors and explaining all the electrical stuff to it. They're very theater-like, you know, it looks very nice, but behind it's all just tape and glue. And I have to add, he's doing this shirtless the entire time for 20 minutes of this footage. He's like, look at this. And so it's very interesting that it seems that nonchalant behavior seems to have had consequences.
I read also that on one of the sets, I think it was the set for like Zordon's lair, which is kind of like this compound with like all these sort of like computers and gadgets and stuff like that. I read that like there were so many lights on the set that it got so hot that like the lights actually melted and they had to like replace each one individually and then like install fans on the set to make it less like dangerously hot. So yeah, that's just another example of like the seemingly many safety issues that they had during the production of this movie.
And speaking of Matt, can you just let's talk a little bit about the themes.
You know, it is interesting that like this was essentially a kid's show or a kid's movie, but you know, you just wonder like how intentional that theme is. And like, if the creators were trying to sort of like, you know, touch on youth and kind of like its fleeting nature or whatever, you know, and the fact that like the kid, I mean, we were just talking about this, the fact that kids who love the show now are, you know, soon enough going to be like parents themselves, or at least like older people. And maybe we'll be like, we'll have different priorities, you know? So it's an interesting subtext for sure, whether or not it was totally intentional. The movie like makes you realize with its, you know, like the fact that Zordon is dying and like is actually dead for a brief period of time. And the Power Rangers see him as a father figure and are very devastated by his death. And then like the fact that the parents are hypnotized by Ivan Ooze, and, you know, Fred is kind of like, frightened by the fact that he like doesn't know what's going on with his dad. He like, his dad suddenly is like silent. He can't really interact with him anymore. There are all these things that are sort of pointing towards like the fragility of youth. I know this sounds like we're very over the top for Mighty Morphin Power Rangers, the movie, but like those themes are there to pick up on, like whether or not they're intentional, you know?
And I think even as a kid, I remember those scenes where like the scene where the parents are moving as a mass toward the cliff edge in the construction site, it's dark. Even as a kid, I remember having this feeling of unease, I would say.
It's definitely, I noted that it was the most emotional investment I had. Like that's where the stakes became real to me. I was like, when Ivan Ooze is like, jump off a cliff. And I'm like, what? What? He wants him to just jump off the jump into a ravine like lemmings. This man is evil. This man is a villain. More than any other action he did, I was like, this guy has gone into super villain territory.
Yeah, and of course it's Fred who like saves the day. 12-year-old Fred who like commandeers this construction vehicle and like pushes all the parents back by like shooting a fire hose at them, basically. Not to mention the Power Rangers themselves, who are teenagers who save the day over and over again. So, you know, like the underlying theme really is like kids will save the day, which obviously is super empowering for young people that are into the movie and the TV show.
Now that we're talking about it, I just thought, I think what sells this theme is the intimacy of our set pieces. Like with the parents, like Ivan Ooze, he's in Angel Grove. He's wanting to destroy the parents of this city. It's a very specific, very small scale goal for an intergalactic supervillain, right? He's not like trying to blow up the earth. I just feel like if this movie was done today, the temptation would be to make it bigger than it needs to be. And I think you would lose those the effectiveness of the nature of what we're dealing with here.
Yeah, because as soon as you do have like the giant sort of robot, you know, insect monsters, that's when it does start to get a little bit like, you know, there's bad CGI. It's kind of like goes off the rails a little bit and you start to care a little bit less, I think. But yeah, you're totally right. Like the kind of intimacy of the relationships between the kids and their parents who are suddenly just like brainwashed zombies. Like it's the most effective part of the movie for sure. Emotionally anyway.
Matt, you wrote this in your notes about some outdated gender stuff with Amy Jo Johnson, the Pink Ranger specifically. I also picked up on that. There are two female Power Rangers, but the Pink Ranger is time and time again the damsel in distress. Like she finds herself in a hairy situation and needs to be saved by Tommy every time.
And I think that happens with Aisha a lot too. She's the Yellow Ranger, I believe. Yeah. But yeah, more often with the Pink Ranger for sure. But both of them seem like surprisingly klutzy, you know, for a Power Ranger. And yeah, like I feel like that's reflecting kind of like the outdated sort of gender norms at the time, like that, like the hero has to be the man saving the woman, you know. It's kind of unfortunate to see that play out again and again in this movie.
Yeah, I mean, it rears its head in weird places, like that when Zed, Rita, and Ivan meet, Ivan shoots ooze onto Rita's mouth, and Zed says, "Finally, someone knows how to shut her up," or something like that. And I'm like, "Who is this for? Is it? It's not for the kids. It's just like, you know, misogyny shorthand."
All that,
yeah.
And I will say though, we do have I would say an empowered female figure in Dulcea, the sort of the guardian of the planet Phaedos. So, you know, you could say it balanced.
If not for the fact that she's in a slave Leia outfit, to which I ask, who is that serving? Might it be the aging out boys who are hitting puberty at this exact same moment?
And you guys mentioned the pink short shorts on the Pink Ranger before, too, you know, like it's kind of in the same ballpark.
Armando, you're absolutely right. And, you know, this is made for the dads in the audience, 100%.
But all credit to the plot writer that thought, yes, let's combine the role that Obi-Wan has as the wise old mentor. And she also does the crate dragon sound as her entrance, a la A New Hope. But then reveals... let's combine Obi-Wan and Return of the Jedi slave Leia into one character. I truly think I'm grasping at straws. Ivan Ooze takes over the TV stations at one point to sell his ooze product that he's kind of selling as like a, it's for the kids, but it's actually for the adults. And it has like addictive properties because the kids eventually like are incensed by the ooze and the parents become zombies. And I was like, you know, is this like a don't do drugs kind of parallel, you know, with the Just Say No symbolism? But also the way he's advertising it is like, I was like, is this a meta commentary on the very marketing consumer nature of what Power Rangers is?
I think it's a great point. I think like it does seem intentional. It's kind of like a fun satire of like, you know, all these kids sort of like storming the grocery store, like the, you know, the toy store to like get this ooze. It seems very intentional. It reminded me of this movie called The Stuff by Larry Cohen from the early 80s, I think, which is about this, you know, weird alien ooze that's called the stuff that everybody gets addicted to, and then it takes over their minds and like turns them all into brainwashed zombies. Like this movie does a very similar thing, and you know, it's like those scenes of like everybody going crazy for Ivan Ooze's gunk or goo or whatever, like they seem so intentional that it can't possibly be a mistake, you know.
If we're good on themes, we can just move on into form and aesthetic.
Yeah, so I was surprised how good this movie looks. You know, it's shot on color 35mm, very bright, very colorful. You know, I think this is true of a lot of movies from the 90s, which maybe were received poorly, kind of critically lambasted a little bit, but I think they actually date pretty well in the sense that visually, at least, they are so striking in comparison to so many movies nowadays, which have kind of like dark, muddy digital cinematography. Like, I feel like the celluloid cinematography in this movie is actually very, very good looking. That's not true all the time. Like, we already talked about the bad CGI of the giant insect monsters, and that looks terrible. But like, just visually, in terms of the form and the color, camera angles, compositions, it all looks surprisingly good, I think. I would also say that the fight scenes are very well edited. You can tell what's going on all the time. It's not this thing that we see in a lot of recent action movies where there's like a cut every half a second. In this movie, it actually, like the shots last a little bit longer. I would say on average, probably 2 to 3 seconds. So we know where everybody is. We know like where the villains are. We can actually see the stunt work and the fight choreography. And you know, like the athleticism is really good. They're, you know, like a lot of the times it's actually stunt people in the Power Rangers costumes and not the actors themselves, of course, but they're really great fighters, very good athletes. And the movie kind of gives us the chance to appreciate that a little bit. And I think this is true right from the start. I'll just say for myself, I went into this movie, like I said, not really expecting very much. And then the first scene is the skydiving scene, where a lot of it is actual footage of, you know, skydiving experts kind of doing all these tricks in the air. And the camera is like following them pretty closely. And we can see that there's like actually thousands of feet to the ground below. And it's honestly pretty thrilling. I was not expecting that. And I think there are some other scenes like that later in the movie too, which are surprisingly like well-constructed and pretty exciting. I think the scene where the like alien crows kind of like swoop down to pick up the Power Rangers, sort of like the flying monkeys from The Wizard of Oz, looks really good and is pretty scary. Like, that's a pretty intense scene, I think. I would also say that the special effects of the scene where the Power Rangers are like trying to find their way to this temple to find like the secret power that can resurrect Zordon. They encounter these kind of like dinosaur skeletons which come alive and attack them. And thankfully that is not CGI, but seemingly like practical effects. I would guess probably like puppetry or animatronics or something like that. And that looks really good as well. So yeah, I'm not trying to like sort of overplay the like the form of this movie, because it's not like super innovative, I guess, but it is extremely well done. It looks a lot better than I expected it to. And I think the sets and the costumes, Ivan Ooze's costume in particular, really do kind of like evoke this sense of cartoonish wonder, which of course is what the movie is going for. It's you know, it like nails that vibe really, really well. And it's really kind of like setting up the perfect atmosphere for the movie. So overall, the form and the aesthetic, I think, are surprisingly good in this movie.
Yeah, man. I don't even know what to say. I don't want to repeat what you just said, but I could repeat what you just said.
kind of a quick rundown, I know. Sorry.
The aerial footage of them skydiving, like, you're going to start your movie off with that. We're in for a good time. I wanted to point out that I was impressed with the fight choreography. And Matt, I know you've mentioned a fandom for kung fu movies, right?
Very much, yeah.
I am not versed at all in like classic kung fu films. And I wanted to ask you, could this movie be my gateway into that genre?
Ooh, I like that. I think it could be, yeah. You know, one of the things that I like about the stunt work in this movie is that there aren't very many wires. Like, a lot of kung fu movies do have wires to sort of like, you know, imbue the characters with like superhuman abilities or whatever. But here I think it mostly is just like good martial arts, like good fighters who are just kind of allowed to do their thing. And the movie just kind of highlights that a little bit, you know? So if you like, yeah, if you like the stunt work in this movie, I would recommend Fist of Legend, starring Jet Li, which is from the early 90s as well. yeah, if that would be like my recommendation for a gateway movie into Kung Fu.
Yeah, I think there's just something to be said about the movie serves as an extended episode and using the form of the episode, but adding a kind of new aesthetic flair. I mean, they changed the costumes. The costumes actually were, this was like the first time that they weren't spandex, that they actually added like battle armor. And so, so there's a kind of a three-dimensionality, and you can act, I mean, and again, I think it's this thing, Matt, you were mentioning film. I noticed this whenever I watch like the Blu-ray of the original Star Wars trilogy, that like there's something about being able to see the paint streaks on the costumes. I noticed it. Remember one time when I watched A New Hope, and I was like, I can see like the paint strokes on Vader's helmet, which makes it seem real. I can see texture on it, and the same can be said of a lot of the battle armor for the Rangers, which I really appreciated. And of course, the dinosaur fight scene. Again, it just stood, it stands in stark contrast to, again, we'll probably talk about it, the CGI of the actual kaiju fighting, which makes you kind of long for the kind of more old school style. I think the one instance of Wire Fu is when the White Ranger does his corkscrew kick.
Yeah,
and it's very light, but I'm like, I do that image is stuck in my head as a kid. I'm like, that is the coolest thing ever. He's kicking him multiple times because his Mighty Morphin Power Ranger powers are so awesome. It got me hyped. I gotta say, it got me hyped. Especially, and while the CGI may not be good in kind of its full glory, I think the Zord designs are actually very interesting, particularly the Falcon Zord of the White Ranger. Because boy, nothing made me want to buy a toy more than watching the Falcon bring his wings forward and his feathers become missiles. And I'm like, dude, I want to push the button on the back of that action figure to fire the choking hazard missiles at my action figure of Goldar. Yeah. There's got to be something said there.
Mission accomplished. Yeah.
Well, yeah.
I would just say in general, like, this movie knows what it is, and it's like not embarrassed to really embrace that campy vibe, you know. I feel like other movies might be a little bit like winking about it and like, you know, like imply that they're like too good for like the campy vibe, but this movie's like, no, this is what we are, and you know, we're not ashamed of it. I kind of appreciate that. I appreciate the lack of pretentiousness, you know. It's a super entertaining movie, very, very funny. And you know, it's not just like, you know, like bad puns and stuff, which we will get into that later as well. But like some of the intentional humor is pretty well done. Like my favorite joke in the movie is when it's like a Zord fight towards the end, and there's like a, you know, secret move button, like for emergency purposes only, and they push it, and then like one of the Zords like knees the other one in the junk, and that's like the special move on this like huge Zord thing, you know. That's awesome. I love that. That's a really good joke. So I love all that stuff. The last thing I'll say in my good category is the song Are You Ready by Devo, which I've heard before. I never knew that it was in this movie, is like perfect for this movie. And especially because the lyrics are action boy now, action girl now, like in like during an early fight scene. And that is just like the sense of humor of this movie in a nutshell. So I really enjoyed that.
Yeah, I mean, I gotta say, adding to the good, that again, I'm surprised I didn't buy the music from the motion picture CD, because I mean, the track list is hot on here. Vince and I, this is a throwback for both of us, but I think Free Ride during the rollerblade sequence holds a special place in our hearts. Not only because it's a banger, but him and Vincent and I also were in middle school band together. And we played a mean rendition of Free Ride.
We sure did. And I watched this movie 3 days ago now, and I still have that song stuck in my head. The selected sample or the selected tracks for this movie, they throw Van Halen in at the end too, with that pizza and fireworks. This soundtrack rocks.
Red Hot Chili Peppers over the opening skydiving scene. It's pretty great.
Yeah.
Dude, see, that's what I'm saying, man. This is they knew what they were doing, paying for the licensing on this one.
Yeah, they're like, we'll save money on the actors. We'll just pay the licensing for these songs.
Oh, man.
Sorry, I'm apparently hung up on it. We get it, Vincent. We get it.
No, I love it. I'm glad that you're bringing that up. It's like working a little like socialist commentary into the episode, which I fully support.
Two episodes in a row now.
Man, I'm as a theater producer, it is the one thing I try to always be honorable about and acknowledging when I'm paying under market rate and making sure that people's time is respected. And for my own actors, people that I hired to advocate, so that when a check doesn't come in or it's lost in the mail, that I tell them, contact me immediately. So thank you for bringing that up, because this is the kind of stuff that happens. You have a movie that grosses $65 million and you're, as an actor, getting no merchandising rights and walking away with a couple grand. Get out of here.
Yeah, seriously. Yeah. I just wanted to add the costume of Lord Zedd specifically is amazing. It is magnificently ugly and gross. Like, his raw muscles are showing. He looks like a Freddy Krueger nightmare character. But I don't know if you noticed, Lord Zedd, his brain is exposed, and if you look at it, the brain is pulsating.
It's throbbing. I didn't notice that. I was like, is that CGI? Is that real? But because I never noticed that, I was like, wow, that is gross.
Yeah, there's like a air pump in there moving it. I was like, this movie's amazing because of that little detail.
I think I also remember there being an action figure that you could hit a button on the back and it would pump like red liquid through like his armor. I think maybe one of the movies or one of the shows like had that like kind of fun effect that his blood is still flowing. Which is gross, but gross. Super cool.
But in like a good way. I was curious, is it okay to not have any conflict? I don't know why Rita Repulsa and these bad guys have a castle on a moon just overlooking the Earth. Like, I went with it. I'm happily suspending my disbelief. But I was just like, there are a lot of unanswered questions in this movie. Why is Zordon? Who is Zordon? I don't get it.
I can answer the moon thing, because Rita Repulsa, while Ivan was put in prison, I'm going in the weeds here, but I guess this is my role. Ivan is put in like a hyperbolic egg chamber in Earth. Rita Repulsa was put in a hyperbolic dumpster on the moon. And so that's like the inciting incident for the original Power Rangers, is that her dumpster is opened in the same kind of manner that Ivan's is opened, but hers is on the moon.
Okay.
That's as far as I can go without reading the Power Rangers comic book omnibus.
Well, we appreciate your insight.
Well, that's cool backstory. Like, I feel like I would have appreciated if the movie had just like mentioned that briefly, you know? But also like there is like an opening title crawl, which sort of just says like Zordon is an intergalactic being who like represents all that's good in the universe or whatever. That's definitely a loose paraphrase. And like, even like that's in the first couple seconds and I'm like, wait a minute, what's going on here? And I feel like in a way that opening title crawl actually sets you up to be like, don't try to find logic in this story, like just go with it, you know? And for the most part, I was okay with that.
One thing I want to mention about the bad, we mentioned it several times, as the CGI. This is Scorpion King, Wild Wild West level bad. But I think I rather than trying to find the words myself, for a masterclass in writing, the legendary Roger Ebert, in his review, his half star review of the Morphin Power Rangers, is, I'm going to quote it twice, but this is what he had to say about the CGI. The movie also features various large animated monsters that walk stiffly down phony-looking streets and do battle with one another in the tradition of the worst Japanese monster movies. Put this in the show notes. For a masterclass in writing, the roast of this movie by Roger Ebert is mwah, chef's kiss. But you already have the best way to do like Japanese monster fighting, and you ditch that for you know, the Silicon Graphics, the new kid on the block, but the sense of scale I felt was lost. I remember watching the TV show, they would destroy buildings and you get this sense that like, these are giant Zords walking, you know, lording over this, you know, larger than cities. And in this one, I noticed how small they were, that they were barely five stories, maybe. And that's what it felt like. They weren't very big. So their sense of scale was very, was really hurt by the CGI not being able to maybe scale up and manage like a city-sized threat.
That's a good point. Yeah, I can give my bad category, if that's cool.
Yeah.
I would just generally say that like there is really not a lot of thematic or emotional substance in this movie. And maybe that's stating the obvious. And also maybe seems a little contradictory because we've been talking about the thematic and emotional parallels for a while now. But I think at the end of the day, like there is just not really a lot to like latch onto here. There's like the characters are thin, as the great Roger Ebert said. Yeah. And like for as fun as this movie is and as great as it looks, there's really like no reason to care what's going on all that much, you know? So I feel like any movie like that, you can only enjoy in a particular way, but doesn't really have like lasting substance or significance, maybe.
Yeah, just a little bit more depth, right?
Yeah.
Like I agree with you 100%. I think it's tough with these sort of kid-centric films. Unfortunately, many of them kind of lose sight of sort of the emotional stakes that an adult version of this movie might have. With that said, there are plenty of great examples of kid-centered monster movies, Spielberg making some of the best. But I think what you said earlier, that this, the vibe of this film is very cartoony. I think in that they just probably called a spade and said, you know what, let's just commit to the cartoon aspect of it. And that'll carry us through.
And that's, yeah, like that's both a good and a bad thing, right? Because as I mentioned before, I like the lack of pretentiousness and like the fact that they know exactly what this movie is and they embrace it. But at the same time, it's like, well, you can only go so far with something like that, you know?
Right. My one campy thing is how the movie ends with a shot to the junk, to Ivan Ooze sending him into an asteroid. There is a specific button on their Zord for just that instance. I'm like, who do they want to do? Have they done this before? Yeah, are they going to be able to do it again? Is that button easily reset? What are the logistics behind this button?
It's one of my favorite jokes in the movie, but you're right. It asks a lot of questions which go unanswered.
Yeah.
And I think it probably is unanimous that the camp MVP goes to Paul Freeman as Ivan Ooze. The man understood the assignment. He took, you know, I think you see this a lot with, you know, the great, you know, Shakespearean actors always make great villains because they understand, especially in this context, what to do here. I think, you know, Paul Freeman is understanding where this kind of is in the timeline of movies right now. I mean, remind me, you know, doesn't Tommy Lee Jones' Two-Face and Batman and Robin come out right around this time too? Mm. Like, I mean, within because I was just getting a lot of that, you know, this is that era of what people understood.
Yeah, I totally agree. I you know, like the character of Ivan Ooze, like really kind of carries this movie, I think. And you're right that Paul Freeman is perfect for the role. He nails that blend of silliness and gravitas, as you mentioned. But yeah, there's so much camp in this movie. I feel like you could point to like practically any line of dialogue and it would be a good example of that. I'll just give a couple of my favorite punny lines, if that's okay. Like, cause I feel like that's a perfect example of camp. So there's a part where one of the like Tengu warriors is like split in half. I think like another Tengu accidentally cuts it in half. And one of the Power Rangers says, talk about a splitting headache. I really love that moment. Part where Ivan Ooze says to one of his kind of like alien crow characters or monster crows, how about taking another quack at it, which is really good. You ooze, you lose. That's one of the better ones. I think maybe, Armando, you might have written this down in the notes, but this is another one of my favorite ones too. Yo, fossil head, I've got a bone to pick with you.
Amazing. As he's fighting a dinosaur.
Right. Yeah.
A dinosaur skeleton. this is a throwaway line. This is like literally like as a fade out is happening. Mordant, the pig man, says as he's yelling at the parents who are zombified, digging up the villain kaiju. Yeah, I had a week back. About a week back. just rolled. My eyes just rolled over three times over. But clever. I'll give it that.
I also picked up on that line in the moment, and he's like in the way background. He's having a conversation with Goldar or something. Those two are just a perfect, you know, duo of witticisms, and you just hear the audio. What that joke? And yeah, holy crap!
It's an amazing throwaway wordplay. It's awesome. One last campy thing that I want to bring up. It's one of my favorite scenes in the movie, which we've already referred to before, is the rollerblading scene really early on, where it's just the Power Rangers sort of like rollerblading. That's all they're doing, and like it's one of the most like mid-90s things that I've ever seen. Like just the costumes and the soundtrack, and I don't know why I love it so much. It's like they're all just like such happy teenagers, and they're like, yeah, like high-fiving, like really, you know, it's a great moment. It's right after the skydiving scene early on in the movie, so like already I was like, all right, whatever this movie's doing, I'm into its vibe, you know.
That's awesome. And yeah, that's great. Well, if there's nothing else, maybe we go to our final ratings.
Yes, I would love to. All right, okay. So we got four ratings to choose from here on Camp Kaiju. Number one, it's a timeless classic. It definitely stands the test of time. Number two, there may be some antiquated moments, but overall it's great and does stand the test of time. Number three, it may be historically significant or just fun, but it does not stand the test of time. Number four, it is not worth revisiting and definitely does not stand the test of time.
Armando, as our guest, how do you feel?
Oh man, how do I guess I gotta do it. Even as a Power Rangers fan, it's not worth revisiting. It just doesn't stand the test of time, because I would ultimately recommend that you go watch Day of the Dumpster over watching the Mighty Morphin Power Rangers movie. I think the CGI is the most damning part, because I have to say, I mean, I recommended this. I was like, you should do this, because I was like, in my mind, it's kaiju. But we've probably spent the most little amount of time talking about the kaiju moments in this movie. But when I went to, like I said, when I went to go back, watch an old episode and watch the kaiju moments there, I was like, that's what my mind remembers. So I got to give it the lowest rating.
Wow. I was about to give it classic stands the test of time. I think this could be the most polarizing movie we've brought to the show.
Wow.
I'm not going to give it true classic status, but does it stand the test of time? I think there are plenty of antiquated moments, such as the CGI, such as some of the damsel in distress type stuff. With that said, those moments and those elements are short and they're not really focused on. The film focuses enough on its strengths, such as Paul Freeman, that I have to say it does stand the test of time for me, despite some antiquated moments.
Awesome. I love this, because we're all giving this a different rating. I would say that this movie, you know, it's fun, but ultimately it does not stand the test of time. I would give it the second lowest rating. I there's a lot that's really entertaining, surprisingly like fun to look at, like pretty well made in some spots, honestly, I think, like, you know, well shot, well edited and so on. But yeah, there's just not enough substance to really make this like worth a recommendation. I think it's a very fun watch. It's so enjoyably campy, but I like the comparison to the TV series, Armando, which I, you know, again, don't really know very well. And now, honestly, I'm kind of like motivated to give it a deeper watch and see some of those kaiju episodes, because you know, that's a good comparison and contrast, and I was not really aware of that. But just taken on its own, I do think this is a fun movie, even though it does not necessarily stand the test of time.
This has been such a great conversation. I cannot believe we have all just like scattershot our thoughts there. our ratings.
My inner child was destroyed. He resents the revisit.
I feel like my inner child was reawakened by watching this movie.
And my inner child was reaffirmed, I suppose. Well, thank you everybody for hanging out and watching and listening, whether it's on YouTube or wherever you podcast. Please follow, leave a review, give us a rating. Check out some of the opportunities we have to financially sustain Camp Kaiju. And we're going to see you in just a couple weeks with Matt. What are we watching in a couple weeks?
We're watching Shin Godzilla. Frank Olsen will be joining us once again to talk about that movie. I can't wait. It's going to be a great conversation.
It's going to be good. I've only seen it once. Very excited to revisit it. Armando, we have to have you back at some point.
I can't wait. I think if I haven't alluded to it already, when you guys start branching into the anime cross section, I'll be there. I got some thoughts to share. And Vince, just to add to Shin Godzilla, I don't know if you watched it the first time, Japanese dub or English dub, but there are two different experiences to be had there. If this is going into your second time, I would watch the other one. It's almost a different movie in a good way.
Okay. Yeah, that's great. I will definitely think about that. So, Armando, anytime you have an idea, throw it our way and we'll make it work.
Thanks.
And thank you all for hanging out. If you liked what you heard, please tell a friend, leave a rating and review, and visit CampKaijuMovieReviews.com, Instagram, or even Patreon for more monster movie content. Links in our bio. We can't thank you enough. Camp Kaiju is recorded with your help in the Twin Cities with music by Terrence Jackson. Oh, and before I forget, Camp Kaiju is sponsored by BanditsEmporium.com, where you can shop exclusive monster-inspired t-shirts with part of those proceeds supporting this show. BanditsEmporium.com. Find the link in our bio. As they say, we sell shirts. And again, as Camp Kaiju says, thank you, friends. And until next time, stay campy.
Do you want us to take another whack at it?
How about taking another quack at it?